percolate on a particular mix of odd and inspiring news headlines in Wendy's Coffee House. Newsmakers with a penchant for the unknown, unexplained, and unusual share their experiences with UFOs, ghost encounters, near-death experiences, and more for your own unique blend of Wendy's Coffee House Curious. And now, here's Wendy.
Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio, in a shelter-in-place studio. Well, okay, this is because in Kansas City, there are certain people who are allowed into the station, and that would be those of us who are considered air talent and production people, and everybody else is still at home. This is absolutely an amazing time to be doing what I'm doing in radio. I've never experienced anything like it, and I'm sure if you're listening, this is a first for you for the most part. These are uncertain times. And what I also got with that was going home through my archives, finding things that will fit right in because some of us have more time on our hands. And I choose to use that to upgrade and expand my awareness and go back and do a reset. What is it I can pay more attention to that I haven't been able to because I've been so caught up in everything else? And this is the stuff I like to delve into and explore. One of the podcasts that may have crossed your mind or you might not have been exposed to it to check out, and it is listed, Real Life Supernatural Stories for Uncertain Times. How prophetic. Perfect. It's the unexplained. And it's Richard McLean Smith, and on the top it says from Tatler, these mysteries are all the creepier for being true. Okay, there's a potato chip. I'm done. All right, now, a lot of stuff going on. Some of the stuff in the news that is, aside from the coronavirus, just a repeat. Part of this is we are not supposed to be going out. And when we do go out, we're supposed to be really careful about what we do, what we come into contact with. And those are the rules right now. So washing hands and not touching your face is kind of a mantra. Wash hands, don't touch your face. Remember that. Stay at home. But there are exceptions, and they call it for essential travel, essential getting out groceries, doctors. Certain things are considered essential, and it's in different states. All right? So I'm in the Midwest, and Kansas and Missouri. We're right in the center of that area, so we have different rules. Different states are each acknowledging certain things as priority, and where you are may be the same. So whatever you are doing, I appreciate you listening. And I think you're going to find something of interest here because we've got Ingo Swann's niece on the line, and she is sheltered in place somewhere else. Not with us. Ellie. Ellie Flippin is on the line. Hi, Ellie. How are you doing?
Good, Wendy. How are you?
Well, as you can hear. we're in place. And I'm assuming wherever we are now, we truly have a captive audience. So if you're listening to this, yes, it's a captive audience. You are sheltered in place, and where are you at?
I'm in Virginia.
One of the last states to get the, or was it West Virginia?
West Virginia.
Yeah, it made all 50, like, okay, here we are. We're all included with the coronavirus stuff. All right, so I'm really glad that we're talking to you online. And I met you through Twitter because I was following the Ingo Swann, the estate of Ingo Swann. And I'm a fan, discovered him on Art Bell years ago. And then kept downloading his stuff on YouTube and the Penetration manuscript when he was insistent that everybody needed access to this information. I was thrilled. I thought, yes, yes, he's a trailblazer. So I was so thrilled that he was insistent with his belief that we need access to this information. And then you guys revised the book and put Chapter 9 in. So we're going to talk about Preserving the Psychic Child because that's the latest book. And I think it's absolutely fantastic, fantastic information in there. And I want to go back and say thank you for also updating the Penetration manuscript because it's extraordinary, the material in there. So, Ellie, I guess I need to turn the show over to you for background on what all's going on with Ingo's estate.
Oh, great. Well, first, thank you for allowing me to talk about my uncle, who I called Uncle Ingo. And I think that started a whole trend where anybody who came to visit Ingo would call him Uncle Ingo, too. And I think he got a chuckle out of it. So,
yes.
So thank you so much for doing that. With the estate, our goal is really to keep his legacy alive. And for Ingo, that really meant for people to have access, as you said, to information so they could experience things themselves. That was his whole mantra, if you will. He really wanted people to have information, but more so to do something with it, not just to read about it, but to live it, to experience it, to have it envelop them. And so our goal has been to try to make this vastly available so that people are able to do this.
Well, when you're republishing the books and deciding what to put out, like this was an unpublished manuscript of Preserving the Psychic Child. Was it intact or did you have to go through and put it all together?
What actually was part of a big box of a lot of material. So what we found with Ingo is that he started a tremendous number of things, and that was deals with both his art and his writing. So he started, but he never finished, which was kind of frustrating because you'd get along in a story and then all of a sudden he'd stop and you'd say, oh my gosh, Uncle Ingo, why did you stop? You were just in the middle of it. But one of the things that he wrote, why did you stop then? And it's true for his art, for his paintings too. He did the same thing.
Yeah.
He had a huge number of unfinished works and very limited number of finished works.
Wow.
But in this book, this Psychic Child book, was actually part of a narrative of psychic literacy. And that was a huge box. And he kept that in a box on a bookshelf above his head. And for whatever reason, he never published that. He certainly could have. It was in finished form. Colin Wilson had written an introduction. It was all set and ready to go, but it remained in this box. And that was a book that we put out last year, Psychic Literacy in the Coming Psychic Renaissance.
Mm-hmm.
But in this box was also this little manuscript, which we just thought was phenomenal. But it wasn't in the state that psychic literacy was in. It needed a little bit more. So we did pull from some different places, do some editing on it, and put it out. But for the most part, the beginning to end parts are as Ingo envisioned them and wanted it, I guess, published. I'm not sure he kept it aside. But when I read it, I said, wow, this is probably one of the most human documents that Ingo has written.
Well, it's very accessible.
Right. To me, it's like, in a way, Purple Fables. And I was living with him when he wrote Purple Fables. I think this was written in the late 80s, probably after he had just wrapped up his work at SRI, and really was entering this phase where he was reflecting on his life journey to that point and starting to look back and think, oh, there are things that I had wished had happened along the way. Although my life has been extraordinary and I don't have any regrets, I just wish this information had been available. And I think Preserving the Psychic Child fits in that pocket.
Okay, so Purple Fables, I have not read that. So refresh.
So Purple Fables was something Ingo writes in, I think, the beginning that he woke up 4 days in a row and that he woke up with these stories, each one given to him in a consecutive 4-day period. And it is, I guess, in sort of a fable format, a telling of kind of different narratives. And the gist of it is basically we have these abilities. Everybody has these abilities. And here's a story that kind of talks about that.
Okay.
In a 4-series part. It's a very short story narrative.
Okay. But that means if we have downtime right now, we have time to read it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And it's actually one of my more favorite stories. And I had, when Ingo passed away, my son at his memorial actually read the intro and the conclusion to that book.
Okay.
At his memorial service, because it just was something that came to him. He embraced it and he wrote it and he shared it. And it's kind of easy to consume and understand.
Okay. Narrative. Basically, just saying that these are all a part of this. So are they fiction then? And you said fables?
They're fables. So they're kind of written in that kind of, I don't want to say magical or mystical, but in a fable format. So there is something to be taken away from each of the 4 stories that are contained within it.
Okay.
So there's a message,
yes.
A message, if you will.
Yes.
He calls it a quartet, and the four chapters are called The Temple of Sanity, A Clay Modeling Lesson, The Fate and Destiny of a Traveling Clairvoyant, and The Watcher of the Purple River.
Okay. We're going to take a break real quick. But I like that. I also want to come back because that's kind of a start to give you some more palatable. Because sometimes he gets these books are intense and it takes like penetration. It's a deep dive and a long read. So we're going to come back with the background of Psychic Child and talking about the child being like a little computer. And with my guest, yes. Ellie Flippin, who's Ingo Swann's niece and has all sorts of fun stuff connected to Ingo on the website, too. We're going to come back in just a few here. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. My guest, Ellie Flippin, she's the niece of Ingo Swann. And you can check out Ingo's website, ingoswann.com, to find out more information about him. I like the fact that some of his artwork is up there. He had some tremendous works of art, and I think some of them are at the AVM Museum. Are they still there? The Visionary Art Museum?
Yes. So they have 8 of Ingo's paintings. They're in masterpieces. They're probably the most complete but most complicated pieces that he did, and they are on 7 of them are on permanent display.
Okay. And the one on the website I see is the Edgar Casey aura chart.
Yes, the Edgar Casey aura chart was a painting Ingo painted in the late 60s, and he gave to the ARE in Virginia Beach. And interestingly, when he was still working at the ASPR, there was an art show, and he requested that that painting be in this art show at the ASPR. And after it was done, this was done in the early 70s when that show wrapped up, he actually kept it and he put it underneath his stairs in his studio in New York. And there it sat from the 70s on. And then when he passed away, we found it. And I reached out back to the ARE and said, oh, we have the Edgar Casey aura chart painting for you. And they said, well, we had it before. It was on permanent loan. Ingo said he would give it to us, but it never came back from this art show. So
wonderful.
So we bought it back because I'm in Virginia, not that far from Virginia Beach. My son and I drove it over to the ARE, and because it's actually very large. Ingo, everything he did was very big. Uh-huh. So it's kind of hard to get this impression, but on the website is the Millennium painting, and it's a triptych, and each of those 3 panels is 8 by 10 feet.
Oh.
So as an example, so this painting is probably 6 feet by 4 feet.
Yeah, and massive.
It's massive. So my son had to lie underneath it as we were driving, and so he became very familiar with this painting. And it is, I guess Edgar Casey writes about his past lives, and this painting is a reflection of each of those lives. So I asked my son when we were there, what do you think was Edgar Casey's favorite life? And he pointed to one of the sections. He said, this one. I said, why? And he goes, because there's a hot chick in this one.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. It all depends on your perspective and your focus.
Your focus. So they were extremely grateful to get the painting back. They were actually in the process of redoing their main visitor center building. They made this the centerpiece of building. So when you walk in, you see it. And it is quite impressive. And I didn't think it was going to leave again. But the AVAM was able to convince the staff at the ARE to lend it for one of their shows. And at the same time, the Smithsonian, which is the National Air and Space Museum in D.C., has 3 of Ingo's paintings as well.
Uh-huh.
And they lent one of those, which is one of his highway paintings from the 1970s, to be in this show. So it was quite remarkable to see something from the 60s, 70s, and then his 80s and 90s paintings on display was just, I don't even have words.
Yeah.
Spectacular.
Yeah. Well, and especially the size that they are. I'm going to get back into the Psychic Child. This is a new one, Preserving the Psychic Child, available now anywhere you shop online. And the thing about it is that you start, I like the way he starts out with Preserving the Psychic Child. This is starting out as a little computer where it's born and equipped with a lot of invisible attributes besides the little body visible to everybody. And that's what I think is huge. We forget how much we are born with that hasn't come out yet, that's still in the pocket going, okay, or in the backpack, I'll bring this out when it's ready. And I like the way he addresses that, so that the child is calling on visible and invisible parts. And with a psychic child, sometimes they see things others don't, and they don't realize it until everybody says, that's not real, that's your imagination. Okay.
Right. And I think he's really looked at this book because he said, this is what happened to me. And it probably happens to most everybody. But because of society and society's fearfulness of these abilities, they get shut down. And yet here they are, they're born innate in everyone with the potential to grow and develop, but not an avenue to have these developed and expanded on.
Well, and better understood.
Yes. And so he talks about here, he was fortunate in some respects because his grandmothers, his both maternal and paternal grandmothers, to some extent, mostly his maternal grandmother, had these experiences herself. Mm-hmm. And so they formed a close bond, and in some ways they could relate to each other. And so he did have somebody in his life that said, oh, I kind of understand what you're going through. Here, we can sit down, we can talk about these things, but we can't talk about it to anybody else.
Well, and that, yeah, we have to keep it to ourselves. That kind of discretion is helpful when you've got a child who is extremely aware and may say things that would frighten other people, like, oh yeah, that baby you're carrying is da 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 da. I'm like, oh, hey, nobody knew. Whoa.
Nobody knew, right?
It was a secret.
So in this book, he's really drawing on his childhood and what happened to him. And he had a number of experiences that he's written about in other places of being out of body as a child, of having visions of the future as a child. And in one case, he talks about his home, and he woke up and he saw the whole house on fire, and he went to his parents and he said, the house is going to be on fire. I mean, he literally was shaking and afraid. And because he was so fearful, they finally decided to leave the house. And I think within a few hours, there was an electrical shortage and the house did go up in flames. So he was able to convince, even as a child, those around him that what he was experiencing was real, which must have been quite a task, right? As a young child, that much force and impetus to say, this is something bad's going to happen. You have to believe me. We have to take action on it at midnight, right?
Yes.
Whenever in the middle of the night, right?
Yeah.
And that his parents actually said, okay, this is different. This is not how he normally would be. Maybe we should listen to this,
which
it's phenomenal.
Well, okay. So going back with this, and this is the ingoswan.com for people, if you're listening and you want some more information, it's a fantastic website. And it's a BioMind Superpowers book from Swan Writer Productions, LLC. So if you're doing a search, you can find that. But at the end of the book, the closing thoughts, where he talks about thinking that, you know, people really need this information, and the fact that deja vu is real. And sometimes, you know, it happens when we're asleep, sometimes it's awake. But he said, I don't think that we lose our psychic awareness, because for him, his intuition saved his life. And he says twice as a child and once in Korea, four times in New York. So he says these are huge pieces of our equation that we can pay attention to.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's his message. It's been his message through all of his books to some extent, is that we have these abilities. They come with us before we're even born. We come ready into this world with these senses that are far beyond our physical senses. We need the opportunity to allow these to develop in a way that is not seen as frightening or as monsters or compared to some sort of horror show. That these are actually just things that we are born with to help us navigate the world beyond our physical senses.
Hold on. So it's real. It's all real. And it's in us. And
it's
we're
going
to talk. Yeah, we're going to talk more. We're going to get into the real stuff with Penetration, the Special Edition, and just your perspective on his other work. It's Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Thank you for tagging along on this one. We're all sheltering in place, for the most part, to the best of our abilities, wherever you are. This is an extremely unusual time. And at the same time, it's wonderful to have radio and audio as a form of communication, because this is something we've taken for granted for years. As a matter of fact, they were trying to get rid of the AM in cars. And when the digital is down, where's the AM? And that's with what's going on right now, radio is still a wonderful way for us to connect. And I'm connected right now with Ellie Flippin. She's the niece of Ingo Swann. So we're going to talk about Uncle Ingo, because that's like really cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, okay. Now, the book we were talking about was Preserving the Psychic Child, and there's some wonderful information in that, and it's bite-sized. So if you have a psychic child, or if you are an intuitive or psychic adult, there's stuff in there you're going to like. Penetration, the special edition, includes a chapter 9, which deals with his remote viewing of Mars. But I wanted to talk with you about the ETs, because on the book, where it says the question of extraterrestrial and human telepathy, which I know is legit, what your idea, your thoughts, your connection with him, did he talk to you about any of that?
Well, he actually had a big network. He was very connected locally in the New York metropolitan area with those who had been abductees, and those who frequently were visited by UFOs or the entities inside the UFOs. So he had around him a great number of people. And he often said that he also had intelligence connections that were monitoring these visits,
yes,
by extra beings. So he had a big, so around us often at 357 Bowery were these visitors and unique individuals that were somehow connected, all the way from intelligence operatives to those who had been abducted. And I always found those to be fascinating. And what he would say is, when he was starting to think about writing Penetration, because you remember he was under a security oath. He had a top,
yes,
security clearance.
Non-disclosure.
And disclosure, right. And so for him, which is why he never wrote about, when the other Stargate remote viewers started to write their narratives, he didn't, because he always viewed himself as a patriot. And that was so important to him, was his patriotic duty. And he took his security clearance very seriously. So to think about starting to write about this, although we don't know who Axelrod is or was,
yes,
or what he was connected to. Is it a government agency? Was it a extra government agency? Was it a corporate agency? Was it something from out of this realm agency? We don't know.
Right.
But we have his story. So when he was starting to think about it and to talk about what his work was, I mean, that was a new venture for him. Because he didn't go into this blindly. He went into things very thoughtfully.
Mm-hmm.
And with a great deal of back and forth with individuals thinking about, well, what should I write? How should I write it? But this was a great passion for him, this whole thing on extraterrestrials, just given by the people he surrounded himself with.
Yeah.
So he told me the stories that he does ultimately write about in Penetration with Axelrod, about,
yeah,
the UFO experience in, I believe it was Alaska. I'm not certain. He never confirmed that. He would only just look at you with a Cheshire cat smile.
Oh, yes. Keep the mystery alive. I can neither confirm nor deny. Yes. Okay. So.
Right. And if you ask him a question, he would say, well, what do you think? Well, if I knew, I wouldn't
be asking
you.
Uncle Ingo. Okay.
But he did say that at times he was frightened, but he did see them around frequently.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes he would say, look at that person over here or there. What do you think? And that always was maybe some code for, I don't think they're from around here.
Yeah, duh.
I don't think they're from the parts. What do you see about them?
Uh-huh. What's unique?
Then again, he saw what's unique, you know. But then again, this is life with Uncle Ingo. He lived on the Bowery and East 4th Street. That's where his building was. And at that intersection, there were always a lot of accidents for whatever reason. And he told me that's because there was a gremlin that lived on the light fixtures, the street fixtures,
yes,
and always messed with it. And so he was, there were a few things that I had to know. One, to always carry a $20 bill in case I was mugged. And so I would have money to get somebody.
Yes.
To walk with purpose. And at all costs to avoid that intersection because of the gremlin. There were just three rules.
I love that. I love that.
I had to follow that. So he did see, he said there are a tremendous number of realms.
Yeah.
Right. And he could see into these realms and he could see other beings and other entities. And they weren't just limited to what we consider aliens, but mystical, what has been determined to be mystical beings is too. He said he saw as well.
Well, more like dragons and fairies and elves and all that.
Elves and all that, right. And gremlins,
yes,
obviously.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So, but he did talk about it. He spent a lot of his time after he left SRI, and he did train a few individuals in remote viewing, and they were always very interested in the planets. But one of the things that he put on the BioMind website when he had that going was he had a drawing, and he put it out there to see if people would respond to it. And basically what he's saying is on the other side of the sun where we can't see it, there's a mothership of some sort. There are other ships out there. Mm-hmm. And he was always interested in viewing, remote viewing planets to look for these ships.
Right. Oh, wow. Yeah, see, that's fascinating to me, is because, and that's why, okay, we've got this downtime, you know, this shelter-in-place downtime. What can we do in our own personal ability, space, mind, insight, bring forward, because now we have this quiet space that we're making. And so to me, it's like, okay, time to step back and reset and say everything that's happened prior to now, okay, that's great, that's preparation. And now what can I do to up the ante? And so I'm so glad that these books are available because it's a reminder. I mean, at one point, I think he was doing his remote viewing. Was it the moon where he went out and he saw them and they were looking back at him? And he's like, am I in danger? Because they could see
him. So that's
in
his, right. That's in his penetration story, right? Yeah. Where Axelrod takes him to that secret base and gives him these coordinates. And all of a sudden he's on the moon. And the frightening thing for him was that whatever it is, however you interpret remote viewing to be, whether it's out of body or you're going to a matrix of information or like the Akashic records, as Edgar Cayce says, and pulling this information down, regardless of all of that, whatever these beings were on the moon, they could, quote, see him.
Yes.
And that was, blew his mind, right? Blew his mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's when he became afraid. Yeah.
Well, wondering if he had crossed a boundary or a barrier that he wasn't supposed to, didn't have permission to enter. And that's where you get in trouble.
Right. So he said, what have you done to me? Why have you, here I am. First of all, what is going on here?
Yes.
He was totally not expecting to see what he saw, let alone to be observed.
Yeah. Caught.
While doing it. Caught.
Yeah. That's what I like about this book, because it brings through things that Ingo, who's had a tremendous amount of documentation and behind him research that says what he's done is valid, seeing things beyond our current frame of reference, what we consider to be real and ordinary. So he's gone beyond to the extraordinary to say, OMG, we are not alone. And not only that, even when we think about them, they know what we're thinking and they can think or project back to us and say, Gotcha.
Yes. And interestingly, you know, often when you say psychics and people think of like the 800 psychic lines, which was really frustrating to him, is that he spent his entire career as a researcher trying to follow the models of science to say, okay, if you think this is some sort of cuckoo activity, let me show you that we can validate it using scientific methods. And even though he did that, they still didn't, it still wasn't accepted.
They weren't
ready.
Yeah.
they weren't ready, or they would say, it's impossible. Nobody can be this good. And he's saying, but we are all can be this good.
Yeah.
We can all be this good. And yes, it is real. But even though he followed all of that, it still wasn't validation enough for him, which is why at the University of West Georgia, they say, Ingo, what the one thing they have learned about from reading all of his archives is what an extraordinary researcher and documenter he was.
Yeah. Okay, hold on.
Process.
Hold on.
Yeah.
We're going to come back. We're going to do more with this. You know, when you're talking to somebody like this and then they're saying, you know, why don't you believe it? And he should have said, why aren't you taking notes? Okay, but he took
why
notes.
Why aren't you taking notes?
He took notes. Okay.
He took notes.
L.A. Flippin and Ingo Swann back in a few. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Thanks for tuning in. My guest, L.A. Flippin, is lucky she got to experience Ingo Swann up close and personal, ask him all the favorite questions that he refused to answer, and just said, well, what do you think? Oh, uncles. So, all right, we want to get back into, because the new book, Preserving the Psychic Child, is a wonderful, I think, if you have anybody around you who is just kind of wondering, questioning, curious, am I getting the right take here? Ingo was so fantastic because when they started putting him through the test, he got bored with the typical little cards of, okay, can you see what's on this card? And he's like, oh, geez, you're boring me, spitless. Give me something real. But this is kind of some things. Don't expect that they're going to be able to do things that are going to be destructive, because that's what all the movies say, that once the kid starts experiencing this. What are there, of just a real quick overview, one of the most important things from the book that you think that he offers in this?
It's just that it's natural, and how to help guide and support the child as they're experiencing these things, I think, is the biggest takeaway for me.
I think, and it also works for adults, and he makes that clear in here, that, you know, this is one-stop shopping. If you have these awarenesses, don't shut them out. Don't pretend that you don't have them, and you don't have to go full boat public. But at least explore, well, where else will this lead?
Right. At least question and be open to the question and be open to the experience.
Okay.
Because he says more harm comes from shutting them down and negating them than allowing them to happen. Yeah,
and that's what is today's advancing understanding of human psychology. The most important and sensitive time for us happens in the first few years of childhood. So when the adult is saying, I don't see it, so it doesn't count, or it's your imagination, instead should say, well, can you describe to me what you're seeing? Can you draw a picture? What does this mean for you? Is it, you know, and ask questions instead of saying, hey, I'm busy, or, you know, that's not real. And that we learn.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I'm grateful that he did put this down in paper.
Okay. You have access to all of his stuff. Is there anything you feel like he might have left undone, unsaid, you know, that there's another project that maybe you're aware of that he left unfinished?
Well, he left so much stuff undone. And for me, I'm just really sorry that I didn't have the opportunity to videotape him and ask him these questions, because he did tell me a lot of stories, but I was younger and I just didn't really pay much attention or put it to the level that I probably should have, and I regret that, because I think that he did, even though he didn't finish a lot of things, he did talk about them in a way, and maybe that path is the narrative where he says we're all supposed to experience stuff ourselves, and to go out and experience it ourselves. You know, don't come to me, go and do it yourself. But his works that we're trying to put out now, like Preserving the Psychic Child, he did have another short story called The Windy Song, which is a fictional account of reincarnation, which I think is wonderful, that we'll be putting out. And then our big book that I've been working with Nick Cook, he's a British journalist and writer, and it's called Resurrecting the Mysterious.
Oh, I like that.
It's actually two manuscripts, one that Nick found as he was doing some work for us. We were starting to contemplate doing a sort of biography on Ingo. And then we realized that really everything that Ingo wanted to say about himself, he put out in different ways. And it kind of morphed into this other book with Nick, this Resurrecting the Mysterious. But Nick found a short manuscript called Secrets of Psychic Revelation, which he felt was like so needed, in the world today. And I found something called the Emerald Kingdom, which is also at the University of West Georgia. And we combined those two into this one book called Resurrecting the Mysterious. So that's taken us some time to piece together. And we wish that he had really finished them, but we're finishing it for him.
Okay, well, so you have your own revelations as you do this, because it's always as we, you know, participate and we invest and we engage, then we internalize it instead of just kind of glossing over and going, oh, there's that, and you forget it. You forget it. But this is internalized, so it's yours.
Yes. So it is definitely a labor of love between Nick and me to put this together and piece it together and weave it together, because when Nick found it, he just found it each chapter in a folder and not necessarily in an order. So it was for us to sort of piece together, okay, what would be the logical order of these? And that was true for the Emerald Kingdom manuscript. They weren't actually in an order. And then some of them overlap with psychic literacy and overlap with each other. So we had to find a way through with that too, to make sure we weren't overlapping, that we were capturing the essential parts. So Secrets of Psychic Revelation in Emerald Kingdom, we've renamed. Mm-hmm. And we renamed Secrets of Psychic Revelation, The Hidden Revelation.
Okay.
And we renamed the Emerald Kingdom, Beyond the God's Devices. And they're included in this. And we did that because Ingo had it in a lot of his books were like psychic literacy and the psychic child and psychic sexuality and all this. And we wanted to get away from the impression people have of the word psychic.
Right.
And wanted to say it's beyond that. And even in psychic literacy, Ingo says he has a hard time describing what psychic really means.
It's frustrating. Right? It's frustrating.
Right. Yeah, so we wanted to get beyond that and to say, okay, this is much broader. This deals with human consciousness, which seems to be the dialogue now.
Yeah.
And whenever we move from being out of the Piscean age, right, into the age of Aquarius, right, this great fundamental movement in thinking and reawakening of all of this, I think we're on the cusp of.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why, I mean, I've experienced people asking me questions about what they're seeing and saying, is this real? What do I do with it? Where do I go? I have something that is, you know, it looks like it might be going to happen. How do I deal with that? And determining what's deja vu, what's, you know, a premonition, and what's just a fear, a projection, which coming from you as opposed to being receiving. That stuff is all being talked about more. And, you know, instead of just saying, oh, don't talk about that, there's more of that conversation happening now. We're out of time. Oh, my gosh. That went quick. Okay. Ellie Flippin, the Estate of Ingo Swann on Twitter. All right. You can connect there. You can also go to the webpage for ingoswann.com. Anything else?
No, I mean, just grateful, like I said at the beginning, to allow us this opportunity to discuss Uncle Ingo. Because he was a remarkable human, but he was also a very genuine and compassionate person as well. And we want the world to see that too, that, you know, maybe he was demanding when he was training the other remote viewers because he was setting a protocol, but he was also one of the kindest people you would ever meet too.
Okay, we will reconnect to find out more about the hidden realm. And hopefully he won't say, well, what do you think? The book will have more than that. Ellie, thank you. We're out of here. Thanks for listening. I appreciate your time too. KCMO Talk Radio. Stay curious.